Right. Welcome to Hospitality 360, number 29. It's 4 p.m. on the East Coast here in the United States. I know we've got Sanam from Dubai, so welcome. I mean, it's exciting to have across. I don't even know what time it is in Dubai right now.
So you can even. Saturday, so,
oh my God, you're dedicated Hospitality 360, yes, sir. So. Welcome. We've got a massive panel today. Exciting show. I'm excited to have everybody on. I'm just kind of going to go around. Our audience knows usually Brian, Stephanie, and Calvin are always here, and Jeff's here every other week. And Katie now, she's just going to be here whenever she feels like it. So, you know. But I'll just kind of quickly go around if we just want to do quick intros, 30 seconds or less. Brian, you want to go?
Absolutely. How's everybody doing? Brian J. Esposito, CEO and founder of Esposito Intellectual Enterprises, holding company of over 75 different entities, operating in 150 joint ventures around the world, and proudly participating in over 25 different industries. With that being said, through my career and meeting Ken, thanks to Stephanie, honored to now operate inside of EV Hotel as Chief Strategic Officer and assisting as well as Chief Investment Officer.
Thank you, Brian. Jeff?
Hi, Jeff Driscoll, 6-year NFL vet, played on a bunch of different teams. Now I am with the Houston Texans playing quarterback and tight end, as well as special teams. So kind of everything out there with EV. I'm on the advisory board with EV Hotels, and I have recently been appointed Chief Impact Officer. So excited to be here today.
Thank you, Jeff. Your Texans are doing as well as my Giants, so I'm excited to be on that show.
we have five more. We got five more. So
that's
we'll turn
right.
Around.
That's right.
Daniel, welcome to the show. This is your first time, so I want to just give a quick intro.
Yeah, how we doing, guys? I'm Daniel Vogelback. I'm playing the major leagues. I was drafted by the Cubs, played with the Cubs for a little bit. I was at the Mariners for 3 to 4 years, and the past 2 years I was with the Milwaukee Brewers. This is my first time on the show. I've known Jeff for a long time, and he's invited me on the show, and I'm super excited to get more educated and learn learn from you guys. So I'm excited about this show and excited to learn.
Super humble. MLB All-Star.
That's right.
Awesome.
Katie? Love it.
I'm Katie Steinberg. I'm a senior account executive here at MarketScale. I head up the sports, entertainment, and hospitality divisions, as well as I have my own podcast, Game Changers, that I was lucky enough to have Ken on recently. But yeah, just happy to be here and excited to be with you all again.
Thank you, Katie. I love your show, Game Changers. Love the title too. Stephanie?
Stephanie Malik, President and CEO of S. Malik Enterprises. We do global business consulting, high impact performance coaching, and crisis management. Not crisis communication, but crisis management. We keep people out of the media, not into the media. So I am very, very blessed and honored to be with Ken and Brian during this amazing journey, and with Jeff as well. So thank you again for having me.
Yeah, and don't forget to add founder of EV Hotel too.
I have to change out my whole entire LinkedIn again. Darn it.
Sanam?
Yeah. Hi, guys. Group General Counsel for Curtin Hospitality. We're hotel operators and managers, and primarily have properties in Jordan, Turkey, Georgia, Saudi, Dubai, etc. And Yeah, I think I echo what Daniel said, that really here to kind of learn, you know, what is happening outside of the region. So really excited to be here, and thank you to Brian and Ken for the invite. So yeah, really pleased.
Thank you, welcome. And, you know, it's always in my heart with Dubai. So, you know, appreciate you actually taking the time and being on the show. I know it's really late there in Dubai as well. So, yeah. Calvin? I'm
just starting my Saturday. So, yeah, still young and happening. But I heard your intentions on coming to Dubai in the last show. So it's time to come back again.
Oh, yes, yes. Definitely is. Calvin?
Welcome, everybody, to Hospitality 360. Calvin Stovall, I'm president of EV Hotel and CEO of Iconic Presentations. 25-year hospitality veteran, and also got some experience in nonprofits. I'm excited to be on this journey with Ken, of course, and Brian, and everybody else on the crew. So I'm just happy to be here. Always happy to be here. And Daniel, man, I'm from Chi-Town. So, but I love my Cubs, but you know, I was a White Sox fan. I lived on the South Side, but it's all love. I still love the Bears too, though.
That's awesome. You got your roots. You got to love who you love.
That's right. That's right, man. That's right. Welcome. Glad to have you on the show, man.
Thank you, Calvin.
So we're going to just get started. I mean, every week we do a mindset question. It might not be a mindset question, but this question is really about 2022. And, you know, I'll just start. It's basically, what can you do to improve yourself in 2022? I'll go with Calvin first, and then we'll just kind of go the other way. So,
all right, cool, man. I'm really focusing on trying to get my shit together for 2022. but primarily, man, I'm really focused. I'm writing a book.
Drop the mic.
Yeah. I got my shit together.
At least he's honest.
You rock, Calvin.
But on the real, man, I'm writing a book. I want to make sure I get that thing published and out into the world by the end of spring 2022. That's really a big goal for me. And just continue to focus on getting EV growing and getting more people to excited and join this EV train, man. And you know, raising my two little boys into beautiful young men. I got a lot of stuff going on, but I'm excited about the upcoming year. It's gonna be a good one for everybody, I believe.
Thank you, Calvin. We appreciate you, and obviously it's a pleasure to have you on EV. Son?
Yeah, I was hoping you wouldn't come to me just after what Calvin just said. but here I am on the spot. I think, you know, personally, I think, you know, the goals have shifted, and I think 2022 is about accepting, you know, your new goals and your new aspirations and what inspires you. And I think realizing that what you had in mind 3-4 years ago, if it's not the same, that's okay. You know, there's a different path to go. So that's on a personal level. On the work level, it's really trying to take Curtin up to, you know, where I believe it deserves to be in terms of international recognition. And we've got last year, actually at the end of this quarter, we've put quite a few key people in some good places within the organization. Which I look forward to in 2022 and how they fit in and how they kind of, you know, bring all the pieces together. So, yeah, I think that's 2022. But, you know, Calvin, you've taken it already. So, yeah, mine was quite, boring.
No, not at all.
No, not at all. I think that's amazing. Stephanie?
I think mine is fairly simple. I think be more intentional with the clients that we're going to take on and with the strategy. I would say focus a lot more on health and spending a lot more intentional time with good friends and support systems. Mm-hmm. A lot of that went by the wayside in 2021. And then I would say asking a lot better questions to hopefully be more purposeful in direction.
Oof. Thank you, Stephanie.
Always dropping beautiful bombs there. Well done. Yeah.
Katie?
I feel, gosh, Stephanie, you always go right before me, and then I always say to piggyback off of Stephanie.
Katie, you can tell them we're going to do a girls' weekend, and that's what we're doing.
Seriously,
the first 2022.
But, no, 100%. I mean, this is already 2021 was a great year, so I feel like there have been so many incredible opportunities that I was presented with this year, and I'm so excited to be in a career that I love and to keep moving and growing it, and to meet all of you, of course, and to be more intentional with my time. What does Brian always say? Time's the most valuable commodity, but it really is. And just to be more intentional with that and take advantage of every single situation. But I'm super excited for 2022.
Awesome. Thank you, Katie. Well, you know, you're with the EV, so it can't be more exciting than that.
Yeah.
Always.
Always. So, all right, Babe Ruth. There we go, Daniel.
Oh, man. I think for me, number one, I'm getting married in January. So that's...
Congratulations.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you. So for me, it would be... definitely to be the best husband I can be.
Look at you.
You know, going forward, I'm a big family person. She's super, super close with my family. So as I go and become, you know, a dad, that's always going to be number one for me when that happens. And outside of that, I think it's just really be better at not worrying about things I can't control and focusing on the things I can control. Because I think in this, you know, crazy time and crazy world, sometimes you worry about things you can't control and you lose track of what you can. So I think for me, that would be definitely number one for me.
Love it, Daniel. Nice, Daniel. Love
I it. Knew I liked that guy. As soon as he got on, I knew I liked him.
Well, how can you not like somebody that gets labeled Babe Ruth?
I can answer that question, maybe not online. I got in trouble last time I asked one of those.
We're going sideways already. Stephanie, you got to answer.
Nope.
Jeff?
Yeah, Daniel, always a fan favorite. I would say just to continue to grow – you know, what you kind of put into place in 2021, build on all the little victories that are in place and make them major victories. So I think Brian, the last time I was on the show, he talked about using momentum. And so I'll kind of build off that is carry over to 2022.
Nice.
Awesome. Beautiful. That's great, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.
And I got to say, two out of the eight people that say my name in their answer.
Yeah, you got some shout out.
Fantastic. Well done.
Brian's all SEO.
I'll keep that in mind next time.
Daniel, call me. I'll pay you.
So, no, not, I don't do that. So for me, it's, I don't want to sound morbid, but, you know, I don't want to, I try to live in the moment. So whether it's 2022, 2023, my consistent actions, they're going to start today and tomorrow. So for me, it's constantly making sure that I surround myself with the right people. And that's through experience and learning to get rid of bad, toxic people or situations as quickly as possible. We all find them ourselves in them. But if you're going to start a new year and use that as a benchmark to start a new chapter of your life or begin a new journey, then, you know, make sure you're very cognizant about who you're surrounded in. Don't blame people for the situations that you find yourself in. Blame yourself and work on trying to not be in that situation again. So again, new year, new opportunities. I love the momentum, Jeff. You know, I always say that. So use it to do some great things, leave a positive mark on this life and keep pushing forward no matter what you face.
Show off. Man, I got to go after you, Brian. Oh,
show off.
Does that make me? I think Daniel was the best one. I mean, I love everything.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's phenomenal. Thank you, Brian. For me, I've been saying 2022 is going to be a year where I become more patient. You know, I believe that's a key to a lot of things. I'm from the Northeast, and patience is usually not in the vocabulary.
No.
So I'm going to try to be a little bit more patient and, you know, hopefully, and, you know, as my daughter grows up, I mean, she's going to be 7 in March. So, you know, obviously I'm looking more towards that fatherhood. So it's going to be an exciting year. I mean, exciting year for everything. I feel like, especially for EV, we're trying to plan a EV Vegas trip for New Year's. We'll see what happens. Maybe we'll we'll throw those EV signs up somewhere in Vegas. as long as they're not on the strip. But all right, well, we'll go to the first one. I know, Daniel, you're going to love this. I heard you're a crypto lover, so we'll just go right into it. It's about the global effect. I think the crypto market, the blockchain market, the outlook currently where we are 2021 to where it's going to be 2026, the device market on the blockchain technology is currently at 482 million, expected to rise to 2,459 million in 2026. Hospitality has the highest growth of this. You know, luggage tags that are going to be using blockchains, tickets that are going to be switching over to digital tokens. And North America, this, I found this surprising a little bit. North America is the largest market for blockchain devices in 2020. It's a lot happening. I know some people are not believers of this, and there are some people that are believers of this, but I am definitely a believer. I'm going to ask everybody else if they're a believer. I'll start with Katie first. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Oh, gosh. I'm with the crypto crew, and I feel like this is not my best subject. I'm definitely a believer. Even if I wasn't, I would be because of you guys, but I'm definitely a believer. There's, you know, so much going on and there's so much possibility. And I think everyone's catching on, of course. I'm excited about crypto and everything that's going on with it.
You just got to say you love crypto and that's it.
I love crypto.
There we go. I like it. Stephanie? Thanks.
Crypto queen?
Yes, that is definitely not me. So here's the one thing, since this has been such an important thing for EV and for Ken and for Brian and for you guys being so patient and taking the time to educate, I've really been focusing a lot on the whole space a lot. And one of the things I really focused on in this article was they said exactly how I was feeling. I think they just said it a little bit better. There's a giant hindrance in the market, and it's going to really close the gap, if you will, with a ton of education and development. So I'm really looking forward to learning more, learning different ways. You know, there's a lot of different ways to get places. I think in learning so many different things about how this is coming out, how it's going to be used, who's going to be really focusing on it is where I can grow. So that makes me super excited. The luggage thing actually made me really excited. I was very, very new adopter on the Delta app when they started tracking luggage before it actually rolled out. So that was really exciting just to be on the front part of that, of trying to make things a little bit better. So when they started looking at those type of things, I was really excited because it's practical and we know how to use them.
Beautiful. I know what to get you for Christmas.
Wow. I'll send you my list.
All right. Sanam?
Yeah, you know, this part of the world, it's, you know, slightly a gray area when we come to and talk about cryptocurrency. I think you know, when we talk about the GCC, so we talk about Saudi, Qatar, we talk about the Dubai, UAE. You know, I think there's still a lot of kind of, you know, I heard Stephanie say the lack of understanding, really, you know, in terms of how crypto works. So, you know, it's like telling somebody or asking somebody, you know, if you believe in God. You know, it's still something that the regulatory network has to catch up to it and actually has to say something about it. You know, it's still something that is, you know, accepted practice here in this part of the world. But it's still not something that's backed up by, let's say, the central banks. So from a legal perspective and from you guys being in hospitality and knowing that, you know, this part of the world is going to be such a market for somebody like EV in the future, I think it really has to be learning led. And it has to be, you know, in terms of, again, going back to what Stephanie said, is, okay, fine, I understand it. I understand the theory of it. But I need somebody to explain exactly how it works. So you're telling me I paid this mug and I have it now, but I can't see it anymore. So where is it? How do I access it when I need it? And how do I turn it back to, you know, a bigger mug when I want to? So really, I think in this part of the world, talking about crypto There are huge advocates for it. There is no denying that that is the future. And it is the right time for it as well. I mean, I know we haven't started the article on the Saudi market as yet, but you know, this is the market that is going to just explode over the next 5 years. And this is the right time to get into the market and start to get people really educated about it. Because, you know, if you think about it, this is old wealth. So people are used to kind of, you know, seeing their assets and seeing them grow or either fall apart, and sort of very, you know, personal about land ownership and things like that. So convincing them that their asset exists and is secure on blockchain, like, you know, crypto, and that they can actually convert it back to an asset is, I think, a challenge for those who advocate crypto. So I think it's good times, actually, this market.
Yeah, we definitely got to chat one-on-one. thank you, Sadam. Daniel?
That's a tough one to follow right there. but, I mean, kind of banking off what she was saying, I was kind of raised like what she, like the old school of like always like the old school money wise and investments. And that's just all I ever knew. And I think that the way that crypto is going, I think that there for a little bit, I don't want to say I was in denial of it, but I just didn't really want to dig into it and learn about it. And, you know, I was kind of, I think the word was more oblivious to, you know, how things were going and where the world's going. And I think I got to the point now, because I am an investor in it, and it is absolutely awesome. I think it was one of those things where once you, you know, actually take the time and realize this is where the world's going and this is how things are going, and you take your time to really learn about it, it's pretty cool, and I'm all in on it.
Awesome.
Thank you, Daniel. Brian?
Yeah, I love what everybody's saying so far, and what Sanam was saying. I preach making people understand and comparing it to real life utility. It's another asset class. It's here. So obviously I'm all in and I believe in it, but I believe in it because of our own projects and the companies that we put to market are backed by our own blockchain IP or our own crypto. So I know what's going on. I'm not the guy that goes and buys a bunch of coin because I think it's cool. I did that old me in the stock market. I would buy some BS stock and have no idea of what's going on in that company until their quarterly reports come out. And I don't like living in that world. I like living in a world where I can, you know, worry about what I can control, like Daniel said early on, and focus on our own companies, our own, you know, returns and what we can do and build value. So what's so important right now to not stifle the momentum, because I do believe there'll be a correction, and that's okay. There's a correction in every market, in every market class. But if you don't have these things secured, like Ledger, for example, it's a phenomenal company. It's a hardware wallet, tremendous security. One of our holdings, Nodal, has a partnership with them. So if we're going to keep moving this forward, you don't want breaches. You don't want people's wallets getting stolen. You don't want people's coins being accessed, or because that's going to stop the rest of the wealth that maybe wants to get involved. So right now, things have to be done so transparently, so correctly. Unfortunately, there's going to be some, you know, bogus crypto companies that aren't really valued or backed by anything, much like a pink sheet stock or an OTC stock. So, you know, that's a reality. It's an asset class. If you want to get involved and participate, be smart about it. Test the waters, get some comfort around it, and think of it like it's a bond, like it's a stock, like it's some sort of a CD. It's another place to park your money, hopefully to watch it grow, or a piece of real estate. But it is intimidating, and it's going to take education. It's going to take people to feel comfortable that they understand what's going on and how do they put their money in. More importantly, how do they get their money out? That's key. It has to be liquid.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Brian. That was just like a whole chapter for another show.
yeah.
But I know that's your favorite subject. So, you know, Calvin.
Yeah, I think everybody pretty much said what I would probably say, but I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
The monkeys?
Wow.
on a serious note, I think we talked about this before. You know, I just think it's education that's gonna help this thing fly, because a lot of people don't know. Of course, you have your early adopters that'll jump right on, but you'll have you know, that bell curve. There's going to be that people in the middle there, they're going to have to truly understand what's going on. Then you have your laggers that'll be late coming into the game. But my thing is, I think, you know, everything about the blockchain technology that I read is in sync with what people want. They want increased security. They want convenience. They want speed. You know, all of those things that this technology can bring, I think it's going in the right direction. But again, the biggest issue is how do you educate the general public on what it is and how they can use it in their day-to-day life. That's the key. And that's going to be the, once that happens, that will unlock the opportunity and potential there. That's just me.
Yeah, and all those kind of classes that you mentioned, Calvin, that will, you know, the latecomers and all of that, I think all of them want to say the same thing, which is, you know, show me the money.
Right. If I can talk.
So it comes back to that. So wherever you are in that class, I think it does come back to just, yeah, education.
You know, absolutely. Because you have a lot of group, the biggest group of people, most people got a feel, touch.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? They're like, I don't believe it. A lot of people believe it's like this stuff floating around in the sky somewhere, you know? And yeah, it's there, but I don't have to worry about it because it's not real. Until people can touch it, feel it, and bring it into their day-to-day, it's just going, we're going to have a challenge. So we got to figure out how to bring it from up there to down here and make it real for folks. That's the key.
I know how. I would tell you, I think I don't need to explain how much I love crypto, but you know how much I love blockchain technology. I mean, EB's right now in the works of developing blockchain technology for hospitality that's going to, you know, do very well and help the industry. I think all this does is helps everybody. Helps with automation, helps with your task, helps with your daily life. I mean, this is what it's about. I mean, we need this change. We need this to obviously move forward through a global economy. And this is what it's going to do. So I'm a very big component. It sounds like everybody else here is a component. Now we just got to get the global economy to think like us. So we'll keep striving and educate. EV will educate, and I'm sure everybody here will educate. So thank you. So the next piece is, I mean, who's ready to go on a cruise? and this is actually, I don't know. I saw it in a way it was coming because whenever you go on a cruise, you always see Margaritaville. When you go to the Bahamas, when you go to the Dominican, anywhere you go, you see Margaritaville. And I felt like it was going to come, and it's finally here. It's going to sail. So Jimmy Buffett and Margaritaville, and obviously they're positioned out of Orlando, so this made perfect sense. They're going to sail from the port of Palm Beach Island over there. And it's going to be the only cruise ship from the port of Palm Beach. It's going to sail April 30th. If you love Jimmy Buffett songs, this is the cruise ship for you. Because they said they're going to play every single Jimmy Buffett song on the cruise ship. Okay? What are they doing? They're capitalizing on their brand that's everywhere. So the lovers, the haters, all of them are going to go to the cruise ship.
Yeah.
If you love Jimmy Buffett, you love the guitar and the hat, all of it, you get every single thing. So I think I know Stephanie's got something to say. What you got, Stephanie?
I was just going to say sponsored. They're a new sponsor.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Margaritaville. Evie is now sponsored by Margaritaville. No, I don't really. I probably don't have very much. I have only been on a couple cruises. I like some of Jimmy Buffett songs. I'm not sure I've had any Jimmy Buffett food. I have nothing to offer.
I think that was brilliant.
I was looking for a sponsorship, you know.
Margaritaville. I can set that up. I do have a question though.
The blender, it's phenomenal.
You do? Are you really?
Oh, it's amazing. Make margaritas anytime.
Wow, and there you go. See, I really feel like they should sponsor us based on that. Why does every single new cruise start on the last week of April?
It's like, you know, they say April showers and cruises don't maybe like showers. I don't know. I have no idea.
I thought that was super. Wow. Richard Branson, yeah, they did all of their launches the same thing. And I think
it's spring break related, Easter. Spring.
Yeah, okay. I think so too. But
the April showers. I mean, one or the other.
Somebody needs to get in contact with them and let them know that, you know, we'll gladly sponsor you on our show if you let us bring all our EV team members on your first cruise.
I got maybe it.
They might take that deal. I don't know.
I'll do it. I'll copy you.
I'm getting on that one.
I vote Katie calls.
I'll call. Hands down. I'll be in for that.
Brian?
Again, I get to meet and work with a lot of people. So I got to work with a lot of the executives that are part of Jimmy Buffett's residential and commercial properties. And I got to tell you, there is a million parrot heads around the world that love this guy and enjoy his experiences, his music. They'll, you know, if the world was flat, they would get on that cruise and go right off the planet with him. So they are dedicated. However, we've seen this before with Kiss. Kiss does a Kiss cruise where people just board that
Kid boat. Rock,
yeah, Kid Rock, yeah. Backstreet Boys. So mm-hmm. we've the music component is so important in so many of our holdings. It's such a key way to bring community together. Mm-hmm. It allows people to enjoy their lives. Everybody's been to a concert, I assume, on this call, or a festival. It's a key component that brings people together. The other thing I was reading, I was cracking up. I was thinking of the Michael McDonald scene in The 40-Year-Old Virgin, when Paul Rudd screams, "If I hear another Michael McDonald song." We'll blow this place up. So hopefully they balance it well, where it's just, you know, not all that, but maybe that's what their fans want to hear 24/7. But I hope it's a success. We want to see these things do well because it spurs innovation and other great IP holders or other great musicians or catalog owners can replicate this. Anything to bring an experience to people, have them forget their normal life for a minute and enjoy a moment. I'm all for that. So hopefully they accomplish that here.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the Purple Prince cruise.
Oh boy,
I'm on that joint.
Oh yeah,
with like holograms.
With Prince, man, that man, Prince music. Could you imagine? That would be awesome. Pink ship, whole shebang, killer.
That's funny.
I'm just very curious to what the blackjack table is gonna look like. So I'm gonna try to find out with that. But Calvin.
All right, I'm getting ready to bring this down to. All right, I hope you won't need a Margaritaville sponsorship from what I'm getting ready to say.
Oh God,
Ken's out.
This is real. I'm all about the branding and all of that. I think Jimmy Buffett has a fantastic name out there in the marketplace for what he does. But I recently, very recently, just a few months ago, went to a Margaritaville in St. Thomas, and the service sucked. And I'm just keeping it real. And here's the deal. Everything there was beautiful. It was perfectly branded. It had, the music was going, the pools were beautiful and all of that. But it was obvious that the training had not been put in place. The people were not happy to be there. The people didn't want to be there. And I'm not saying everybody, but the majority of the people were. I mean, and you know, it could have been a COVID effect or whatever it was, but at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to say this. You cannot blame COVID for a bad experience. When people come to your facility, they want an experience. And the thing is, the sad thing about that situation was that, I mean, it killed the whole vibe, you know? And we're gonna have fun. I mean, I drank enough margaritas to do that. But at the end of the day, what I wanna make very clear, you can have the most beautiful resort, the most beautiful four walls, all of that. But if the people inside of that place are not engaged and excited to be there, it is gonna bleed into that customer experience and it's for nothing. So please, train your folks. Make sure that they're engaged and make sure that they truly care in their heart about the experience that they're creating for their guests. That's all I can say.
Love it. Love it. Sanam?
Yeah, again, you know, don't know much about brand or the experience or, you know, being sort of cultural managers and operators. But I think if you take any hospitality product, I think if the brand has a pull, and obviously, you know, this brand does, and you are providing personalized, number one, and number two, an experience which you know meets the expectation of the customer, I think that you've done your job. And I don't know much about this. I don't know, you know, revamp is, you know, what their focus is has shifted from on to now, but again, you know, this industry is experience led, and more so now. Even when people are looking at local tourism, you know, they still want that experience. But, you know, just I'm thinking on how kind of this would work with in the current kind of COVID environment, and if on the cruise ship they would have like sort of quarantine. I don't know. I'm just thinking very practically
here. Wow, that was great. I don't know
how that would work. But yeah, if the brand has the product, it's going to work. And as long as you provide an experience, yeah, it's going to work.
Beautiful, beautiful. Katie?
I thought this was awesome. I was dying over the Jimmy Buffett quote where he was like, the only thing being better than being at a beach by the ocean is being in the ocean. Yeah. And then he's like, follow our wake. And I was like, he's loving it. Everyone's loving it. But I was looking at the pictures too. It kind of reminded me, it's like green, orange, like lime green, orange, a little bit of turquoise. So it reminded me a little bit of SpongeBob's house. But it looks like it'll be very nice.
We're definitely not getting sponsored now.
It's over. I can't.
Now we got to go to SpongeBob for sponsorship.
His house was on the floor of the ocean, too.
They're both in the ocean. There we go. But, and then not only did they rename the cruise ship from before, they renamed the entire cruise ship line. So that I was like, wow, they really made it. But yeah, I think it'd be good.
Beautiful. They just name it SpongeBob SquarePants.
Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be brief. You know, I love what the Margaritaville brand is doing. You know, in the article, it talked about Margaritaville branded shrimp, Margaritaville flip-flops, Margaritaville casinos. They're capitalizing on, you know, in many different ways and monetizing, you know, people's fandom of Jimmy Buffett and taking full advantage. But as Calvin mentioned, there's a difference between having a product out there and doing it the right way. So I think it's important that, you know, when you do put a product out there, you deliver on the expectations that the brand has built over many years. So I think it's awesome, but there's more to it than just putting a product out there.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jeff. Daniel?
I'll be brief as well. I mean, I live down by the water in Fort Myers, and one of my favorite places to go is Key West. We drive over there. We go to Key West all the time. And, like, just that atmosphere, they have a margarita, little Margaritavilles over there, and it's awesome. I mean, just you're seems like you're always happy being around. There's always music. Everybody else is happy. But like Jeff and Calvin said, I mean, my mom's always told me smiling's contagious. If people around you that you're around that are working are miserable, it makes you miserable. So I think that goes with everything. You know, you can go to a super nice restaurant, a super nice hotel, or a little hole in the wall family owned restaurant, and it's two or three people working, and they're the happiest people in the world to see every day. Where do you keep going? You keep going to the hole in the wall because you want to go be around those people. So I think, like what Calvin and Jeff are saying, I just think it's great, and I love it. Trust me, I love listening to music, being on the beach, but you got to have people that want to be there and, you know, want to smile, so it makes you smile.
Yeah, absolutely. Love Key West, too. I like the pool at the Waldorf, but sorry, I don't like the rooms. But Duval Street, so hands down, Duval Street is a place to go there.
For sure.
So thank you, guys. So obviously, the next item on the agenda here is Dubai. Dubai has always, you know, this is where my career has revolutionized in a way. And, you know, I owe a lot to Dubai itself. And, you know, it's also gave me the mindset on how I actually operate, being very innovative. And, you know, what they're doing is incredible. I knew that they were obviously going towards a different path, and with innovations, they have a 2030 global, they have a vision for a global economy powerhouse and a business hub. That's their vision for 2030. Their public investment has decided for $1 trillion that they're going to invest into. They're going to deliver in hospitality. I think they've actually, the number was like 565 million out of that 1 trillion that they're going to focus on hospitality, deliver more than 100,000 rooms. And they are currently, the kingdom is currently boasts the world's largest hotel pipeline. Their expected growth in the room supply is 67.1% for the next 3 years alone. Yeah. I mean, just being and spending time over there, I mean, I knew this was coming, but it's just amazing to see this actually really happening. And I'll go to Sanam first. I mean, you're from there. You're obviously, it's probably past 1 a.m., close to 2 for you. So I know your thinking cap might not all be there, but I mean, you can, you can give us some good inside information that we don't know about.
First of all, the article that you put up is actually about the kingdom, which is Saudi Arabia. And of course, we're neighbors with them. I mean, Dubai, I've been here for 17 years now, and really, you know, its growth has been absolutely phenomenal. And as Brian said, you know, there are corrections, and like the world has corrected itself, you know, a couple of times since the early 2000s, you know, so has Dubai. It actually has really mastered the experience of personalization and luxury. And I think that's where their niche lies. So you've got business travelers here that obviously, you know, you see balancing, and that's where EV comes in terms of technology. You see them balancing their laptops. I mean, I've done that many times, so maybe we can come up with a way to kind of smarten up the hotels, so we're not doing that anymore. But in terms of luxury, in terms of personalization, I think, you know, Dubai really has outclassed, you know, most other cities in the world. And that is the expectation now. So anything less than that will just absolutely not work. Now, we at Skirt, and we've entered actually kind of the Dubai market slightly later. We entered Saudi first, which is what the article refers to. Saudi, again, I mean, there's so many changes there, regulatory changes in terms of opening up of the market, in terms of how you can own, you know, 100% of your own license. And again, I'm talking about these things because it's on the back of this that, you know, people are willing to come, and people are, you know, that's where the pull still lies. So women are driving, you know, we just opened a hotel about a couple of months ago in Jeddah, the House Hotel. And a shout out to that team here. You know, our GM is a woman. They just had Formula One. I mean, it was absolutely off the roof. It was spectacular. And it looks like any other city now. So yes, their pipeline is definitely quite a heavy pipeline, simply because, you know, they need it. They need it for where they're headed. And again, in terms of, you know, technology and how that works in, you know, as we work with owners, as hotel operators, where technology comes in is them asking us, you know, number one, how much is it costing us? Number two, what is it adding to the customer experience? So I think it's really that balance, you know, for technology to break into those sort of markets. So if EV is, for example, wanting to partner up with somebody like us and speaks to Kirchner and says, guys, you have to convince, you know, the hotel owners that they really need us in their hotels, you know, I'm going to talk and ask you the same question. You know, tell me, because this owner is telling me, look, you're telling me it's going to cost me 100 million. Now you're telling me it's costing me 150. You know, where am I spending this money? Where is this headed? So again, it comes back to education, and it comes back to the smart hotels that AB keeps talking about. But for us as operators, you know, we have to weigh in kind of the benefit to the owner, absolutely, and the benefit to the actual experience as well. So yeah, I wouldn't want to go on. I do want everybody else's input as well, but. You know, and also in Dubai, the industry is changing. You know, they're coming up with different concepts. It's not hotels anymore. It's glamping. So it's glamorous.
Yeah, I know.
And actually, we've signed 3 projects in Ras Al Khaimah, which is by the ocean, where apparently, you know, women like Katie and myself and Stephanie can, you know, can glamp up a bit and sort of not feel like we're in the middle of the Amazon jungle. But I mean, it's evolving, and I think that's where it lies in terms of Dubai as well as Saudi.
No, absolutely. I mean, I have a lot of friends there still. I mean, we talk every night. So, and, you know, it's very different from the time I was there to what it is now. But, you know, I think it's just that they capitalize on a lot of things, and they capitalize faster than any other country, any other nation. And they just touch it and then expect to split it up into 10 little pieces.
Yeah, but you know, also, Ken, sorry to cut across you, but you know, the way they did it is they did it with the airlines as well, and they took advantage of where they were geographically. So it's not just saying that, and that's not how we think as operators, right? We can't, make a building and expect people to get pulled in. You know, we form communities, we want mixed use, we want, you know, to integrate into the environment. You know, I guess the airline, Emirates Airline, the best in the world, you know, take a shower, the A380, the whole experience which you were talking about in one of your shows as well, which was the private jets and everything. So I think they've integrated the hotel industry in terms of experience and taking it to a whole other level, which I think is exemplary. And we're lucky enough as Curtin to sort of be part of that market.
Yeah. Well, I'll see you soon.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm coming. I'm planning a trip in February.
Yeah,
so
we're on the signing spree now, so you need to get in now.
I know. I wish I had time, but definitely February is coming. Yeah. I have to go because one of my good friends, we went to school there and everything, and her birthday and everything's coming up in February, so I promised her.
Mine, so, you know, give me a
shot. Oh, there we go. We'll all meet up. We'll have a Dubai EV party. How about that?
Thanks to everybody on the show, actually, guys. I mean, you've got a friend here now. Feel free to visit us. Reach out to me separately if you want. I'll make sure you have an amazing time. And you get a flavor of the city and how hospitality works, technology works, but also how we like to party here. So
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, right, we'll reach out for sure.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm supposed to answer that. Party up. That's like, what's up.
Oh my gosh.
We'll have a one-on-one conversation, I'm sure. So, Brian.
Sanam kind of summed everything up. But what's great about a new city being built, and Dubai is a relatively new city, they could take all the mistakes that other cities done and do it right. NEOM is, if I'm saying that correctly, I always feel like I'm saying it wrong, but what they're doing there and the amount of money being spent there to build a new city. From my experiences in the Middle East and these places around the world, Singapore is very good at this. Dubai is very good at this. The deals are done in the lobbies of these hotels. You're doing a $1 billion deal with another person because you met in that city and then you experienced everything else that it had to offer. And that's the great thing about when we talk about EV, we're building a brand new hotel concept from the ground up. So we're taking what we believe the market's demanding, what guests and staff want to experience. And obviously some of the things that work, I'm not saying the whole industry is broken, but what does work, what's timeless, and now what can we add to it to enhance the entire overall package? And how can we make money with these properties for the operator and also the brand owner? So that's exciting. What I want to happen, and the few pieces of IP and brands that we own that we license into that part of the world, is they need to demand a better level of that brand. So they need to force the brands to go back to all their other locations, upgrade them. Because if you want to participate in this part of the world, this is what we expect out of you. This is the technology we want to see. And this is what our guests and people flying into our cities want to have. That's great for us because we're prepared for that. It's not so easy for a big brand that doesn't have that in place or know how to do that. It's exciting times. Great to see money being pumped in anywhere. And we want to be able to participate and play in that for sure.
Definitely. EV's coming to Dubai, Saudi Arabia, North Arabia, everywhere.
Time, guys.
All of it. So, Calvin?
You know, when I was reading this article, what I love is, and this is why I'm happy to be a part of EV, because of the vision of it. When I was reading this article, I was bought in like immediately because of where they were going. And that is what inspires people, man. And I was inspired when I read that article I'm inspired by EV. I just think they're thinking 10, 15 years ahead and they're doing things and putting things stakes in the ground to make it happen. I was so excited when I read it. I'm like, man, we got to put an EV there. We have to. But the thing is, what I really thought is that just the leadership and the vision that they have, that's really what people want. That's when you get buy-in and people excited and inspired to join on to something that's bigger than themselves. I really don't have much to add there other than that. Just reading the article, and I loved it. You know what I mean? That was just wonderful.
It's phenomenal. I mean, I love that part of the world. So, Stephanie.
Yeah. So taking kind of what Brian said, Dubai, Saudi Arabia, those are really, really special places for me. And I think really because of the user experience, it's amazing. A lot of the times I have to travel with, a high wealth individual or like an athlete or celebrity, no one cares. No one bothers them. No one comes over and has a conversation with them. Nobody is walking up to, they are no one there. No. And that makes the athlete, that makes the celebrity, the high wealth person, they feel a lot more safe and a lot more secure there. Yep. The other thing that's really great for me that I love so much is I don't have to explain. If I call and book it out and I say, hey, it's funny because when I first started doing it, I was like, I would get in my own way. And I'd be like, I know that this probably doesn't get asked of you very much, but can we have this or can we have that? And finally, I developed relationships and they're like, if you think this is a crazy request, like this is whatever you need. And I mean, that has been from just anticipating what is needed, whether it be in the hotel room or with the brand or just the people that support people when we're there. We can get anything at any time with no judgment, with no anger or frustration. It's like, absolutely, let me get that for you. And then they go 10 steps above that. It's incredible. And like I said, the people that I travel with cannot wait to go back. So to Brian's point, I've traveled before COVID. I traveled there with 7 athletes in a year, and every one of the athletes asked how they could invest. Like, they didn't know about Dubai. They didn't know about Saudi Arabia. This was not a market for them. And so they were like, hey, we don't even really know we're not even sure what we're asking, Steph, but we were wondering, how do we get involved here because of how I was treated? And I just don't think that the U.S. has any level of that type of service. We can barely ask in a night, like a 5-star hotel, we can barely ask for something a little obscure that's not really.
I know where you can get it.
Right. So that was to Brian's point. Everything Brian.
Evie Hotel.
I love that. I love when my clients feel really safe and secure and they believe in a brand and they believe in so much. When you have athletes who never travel with their families and they jump on and go, hey, I'd love to bring my wife here, but she's a little nervous about this, this, or this. And we set up intentional, amazing things for their kids and for their families. It's just, they want to go back and they want to invest and they want to give more and they want to be there more. People think the Middle East is so super scary, and it's, no. I mean, I think New York's scarier.
Yeah.
South side of Chicago is scary.
Right? And I love New York. New York is one of my favorite places ever.
I mean, I learned so much, and that culture is what I want to build, obviously, with an EV and provide that to our consumers and guests, you know, so.
Absolutely. Sanam, what did you say? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I was just going to say, and this is comparing it where all the hospitality foods really are. So I was in Switzerland a couple of years ago, and, you know, this lady ordered something, and obviously she was vegetarian, and guy, you know, they can't speak much English and they don't smile at all.
No.
So he brought out something that she was expecting, a pizza margarita, and it was obviously not, it was something else. And that guy just stood there saying, it's what you ordered.
Yeah.
I'm just taking something that small here. If you are on Corner Street Cafe here, or if you are at the Atlantis, or at one of our future properties, and you say, I don't like what's on my plate, it's gone.
Right. Yeah. Immediately. No questions.
No questions. Yes. Gone. It's with an apology. You will be approached with the manager. And you will get what you want, even if it's not on the menu. They will make you.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's called service.
That is such a different perspective than here in the U.S. I mean, that is just here, man.
Yeah, I've been in the U.S. and they closed down the service on me. So I was hungry at 10 and apparently, you know.
Nope.
Oh, you get there at 9:55, it's closed.
It's over for you, my friend.
Yeah. Kitchen is closed. Like my mom, they tell you half hour before the restaurant is closed, the kitchen is closed.
But then again, Sanam, not to beat a dead horse, but again, when we got there, our flight was delayed. We came in private. There was a whole bunch of small little issues. And they opened the kitchen and they said, what do you want? They didn't give us a menu. They said, what can we get you guys? Because, you know, he's got an early morning meeting. You know, what can we do for you?
Oh, and I was like, packed lunch for you.
Absolutely. They were just like, what can we do? And I was like, no, it's totally fine. And they're like, absolutely not. You guys are here for a week. What can we do? And I was like, nobody's ever asked me that before.
That also, you know, Stephanie, where that also comes from is the great hospitality schools in Dubai, right. Saudi Arabia, and surrounding. You know, I mean, the education there is endless when it comes to hospitality. So, Daniel?
I mean, I'm just going to go off real quick of what Stephanie said. There's a few teammates of mine. there's a few teammates of mine that when I played in Seattle that, you know, travel a ton with their families and out of the country and they all have the same favorite place they've gone, and it's Dubai. And it's not even a, you know, close for them. And I always ask them, and it's the same thing every time. It's the people are just so nice and so welcoming, and it makes you not want to leave. Right. And it's, you know, hearing that from guys that, you know, travel everywhere and go all over and can basically handpick where they want to go. It's pretty crazy to hear that. A lot of people have the same exact reasoning why Dubai is their favorite place. You know, you hear, you go to places and a lot of times like, no, I like this and I like this. But when it's the same reasoning, it's just people are so nice. Right. It's always, that's a welcoming thing to hear. You know, it's something, a heartwarming thing. Like, man, is it really true? You hear it from one person, then you hear it from another person. You're like, man, those people must be really, really nice over there.
Yeah.
Hotel managers and operators, just FYI, that puts us under extreme pressure to deliver that kind of an experience, because the owner's just sat there, no, he's just appointed somebody. So yeah, again, the standards are really high.
Yeah, it's definitely, and I definitely agree with you, Sanam, on that too. It's my 4 years, I've never in my life, and I don't think I ever will, experience like that 4 years ever again. So the service, the culture, the people, I mean, it's just well put together. It's such a great economy. It's how personable it is. We talk about human interactions all the time. We talk about it, but we don't react and we don't take action towards it. And Dubai is very different towards that. So, Katie?
Well, it sounds like in Dubai, hospitality really goes back to the actual term of hospitality, where everyone's so hospitable. And instead of it just kind of being like, you get what you get, it's like, how can I serve you and how can I help you and how can I make you more comfortable? And I do feel like that's something that unfortunately has kind of been lacking in America recently. I've never been, I will say. I can't wait to go. Cough, cough, Ken and Snow, I will definitely visit you. but that's really all I have to say about it. It sounds amazing.
Yeah. February. We're going to have to figure out how we get there, but February.
Yeah, it's my birthday too. Let's just do it.
Ooh. Oh, wow. Wow.
I think
we got a lot of Aquarius.
A lot of Valentine, Valentine babies. Yeah. Can we call Ricky Stalmer?
Cinnamon, we'll get us there.
It's awesome. I love it.
And get a private jet over there.
Our jets.
Keeping up, guys. Just say the word. Just say the word.
Oh, there you go.
You got it. Yeah.
So. Jeff?
Yeah, I think you have me brainwashed because every hospitality or travel or any kind of article that I read, I always think back to EV immediately. And, you know,
it's working. Well,
yeah, it's working. That part of the world, that's just the culture. That's what comes natural to these people. And I think that's, you know, that's how you get automatic response. And it's something that's genuine. It's not something that can be faked when you have a culture like that. And, you know, when you look at EV, that's what we're trying to build is a culture that, you know, is a hospitality culture, just like you said, Katie, super hospitable.
Well, do we lose Jeff?
Oh, no.
Oh, that was gold too. I could feel it.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was tracking with him, man.
I was gonna get Jeff some new headphones, but then now that he just said that, he's gonna think we're brainwashing him through the headphones. Like, that's gonna be a message.
Yeah.
That was great, Jeff. I know you, Jeff. From day one, I know you. You love EV, so always appreciate the support and all the things that you do for EV and everybody else as well. I know people are going to be like, oh, these guys are just constantly talking about Dubai. And I'm like, yes, we are talking about Dubai. I mean, because it's such a great example on what we need to do here in the United States. So,
but I don't think it's necessarily talking all about Dubai. I think it's talking about what your brand is, which is all service. And where do you go for the best service? Where are the service leaders? And like you said, just like Dubai's schools, I mean, this is, you care the most about service and efficiency and just making people feel so good at the hotel. And so where do you go find that? And it just so happens that all of that really points to Dubai. It's just kind of natural.
And you're so right about that, Stephanie. So well said. As I focus so much on service and culture, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, people know that I love technology and crypto, but my love has always been service and culture. But that technology and crypto plays almost the same aspect. And 25 years, I mean, doing this for 25 years and you know, when you see so much failure, it's like you want to take action. Yes. And that's what I feel right now it is. I said before it gets worse, before it even gets to a point where people, and it's getting to a point, but I mean, we need to really focus on those two items, service and culture. I mean,
It's something Calvin and Brian said in one of the previous episodes when you were talking about taking jobs away and personalization and putting technology in there and striking the balance between the two. I think for somebody like EV in this part of the world, I think that's what's important, to find that balance between how you bring in technology, EV tech, EV excitement, which goes hand in hand with the KH enthusiasm, because I love that EV excitement bit.
Yeah.
And how to bridge that gap. So it's not necessarily wiping out the culture. It's actually the challenge will always be for EV to balance that out. Nice. And deliver at the end something that does not take away from what is naturally part of that culture and actually adds to it in terms of technology.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, And it's like everything, right? Like we have to take everything by steps, you know? And that is what the critical component about hospitality is. You have too many processes. There's so many processes, and we have to figure out how do we streamline those processes and be an industry of where we say it's got to be the task. We have to have a less task driven system. So, all right, let me take you. So
Go ahead. No, I was going to just say one thing. It was like when you talk about hospitality, I think Maya Angelou said it best. People will forget what you said. They will forget what you did, but they will never forget how you made them feel.
That is exactly right. That's awesome. Right there.
We need to get that somewhere in the tagline.
That needs to be our mantra, man. I'm telling
yeah.
you.
True. That is phenomenal. So, you know, obviously we're running over a little bit of time, so we're actually going to skip through one. We had two more articles. We're going to skip through one. It's really about... there's a gaming hotel. It's in Mexico. They partnered with HyperX. But you guys can check that out on our newsletter.
That was Katie's shining article. I can feel it.
Nice going, Ken. Nice going.
I'll get a next time.
He was waiting the whole thing for that.
The TikTok thing. We got to talk about the napkin.
Oh, okay.
I love you, Katie.
We'll get that on a newsletter, Katie. We got you next week. Don't worry about it. We got you
Thank
next
you.
Week. So, yeah, that's going to be on the Hospitality 360 newsletter on LinkedIn. I think they'll go ahead and send that out tomorrow Saturday. Yeah, so tomorrow they'll get it out there. So all the articles we posted on the newsletter, thank you. We have over 2,000 subscribers to that newsletter. So thank you, everyone, for supporting that. So I want to take to the best part of the hotels, the absolutely the best part of hotels is their free breakfast. You know, that is the best part of a hotel, if you haven't realized that. Oh. And this piece from
mind blown.
This piece from the New York Post tells us how good this hotel breakfast and how well these continental breakfasts across all these brands are. And they say this actually on TikTok, this young lady posted just like as I was saying how well this breakfast is and not really. I was just joking if you guys didn't find that, you know, where I was being sarcastic.
We got it.
So,
we got that one.
So they had 1.5 million views on TikTok. She says, don't eat the free breakfast. She had one paper towel all night to clean everything. The waffle stations aren't clean. Employees taking shortcuts with breakfast, cleaning issues. And you know what? I don't want this to really be about the employees not doing their jobs. Yeah. I don't think this is really about the employees not cleaning, the employees not doing this. I'm going to point the finger back to the brands is why have this? Why create an extra overhead? Why create more operating cost? And you know that we're in a labor situation. We don't need things like this, you know, because no one's going to breakfast hosts. Trust me. I've been through it all. I've seen it all. And that's why I wouldn't eat the breakfast, you know, but I will tell you this. The percentage on the food cost of what that breakfast costs to what we're providing, it's almost a very high percentage to begin with. What we're paying for it, you know, the labor costs attached to it, and it's a mess. Trust me, it's a mess. I'm not going to detail it exactly. It wouldn't be a good thing at all. I don't think anybody will eat for days and weeks after I tell them. But so I'm not going to detail the whole conversation, but employees don't have the supplies sometimes. They don't have the resources. They're not followed through with them. They're expected, one person is expected to run that breakfast room for 4 hours, and you have a full house of 100 guests. So that's not fair, number one. They can't replenish in time to make the food. So there's a lot of things that go into this. And if people want to read that piece, that article, trust me, when the newsletter comes out tomorrow, you'll probably change your mind about the free breakfast. So I'll go to Calvin. Maybe you can
This article, light. Man.
Remember some legal responses to this, okay?
Yeah. Here's my deal with that whole thing. If you are going, I truly believe if your brand is going to offer something like that, because it is part of your brand experience, you got to train your people to do it. I mean, I worked for one of the greatest brands out there, and I love Homewood Suites and will always love Homewood Suites, but they were great because they trained their people to do it.
And their waffles are good.
This is a training issue. This is a training issue. If you're going to do a breakfast, you have to invest in training your people. You got to give them the food handlers training. You have to do all of those things. And that's an investment. And I get it. Again, this is one of those issues when the industry of COVID and all of that stuff happened, people started cutting. But what do they cut first? They cut training. Yeah. It happens. It's the first thing that goes out the door. You can't do that. If it is part of your brand experience, you have to continue to invest in it. And so I just think in this particular situation, I don't know what the brand was that she was talking about.
It was multiple.
Yeah. It was multiple. I just know that one of the most successful, I would say, amenities that was when I was with Homewood that we focused on, it was the experience of the breakfast. And the hostess was trained, or host, whatever. They were trained to create part of the experience. They made sure that they had the people there and they engaged with the guests during the mornings. It was part of everything. So I'm not going to bash the breakfast because if it's part of the experience, that's good. But you got to train the folks.
Yeah.
Training is essential in all of it. And if you're pulling back on that, it's going to hurt you in the long run. You know,
I'm not giving. Did you just
say? No. Oh, that's usually what he does to me. I love it. It's on you now, Calvin.
Yeah, come on, bring it.
Brian,
is this what he
does to you, Brian? Said what? Brian,
you know what? It is so. I'm looking at Brian, and I'm just waiting for like Johnny Carson to come from behind those curtains,
right? Kermit. Maybe a Kermit costume.
I told him that looks like Sesame Street. I thought Big Bird was going to put his face out.
Look at Calvin. Looks like a creeper behind the curtain behind Brian's head. Like peeking out. I'm like, that's so weird.
I was waiting for the show to go off the rails. It took a minute. We were all way too serious with this.
Yeah. Okay.
He does.
Okay,
he's Ken. Like creeping out.
I know. Ken, he's like, Ken, look what at his eyes.
Got? Bring it to me, Ken. What do you got? You were saying, Calvin, you are saying, Calvin, did you just say, did you just say that Homewood Suites, there's nothing wrong with the breakfast? No, I did not say that.
He said,
there you go. That's all I wanted.
What I said was, when we focused on that part of the brand experience, and I was there, I saw it with my own eyes. I can only go by what I saw. That was part of our focus. That it was part of the experience of everything that we did. So we focused on making sure that the food was fresh, that we followed procedure to make sure that everything was clean, that we made sure that the employees engaged with the guests during breakfast.
Oh.
Boom.
Done. Look how fast his hands go. It's amazing.
He's putting up cute little fingers.
Between that and the creepy lurking behind you, it's a lot.
I'm like mad over that. I did not realize that. It's so funny.
That's great. It's
like, I just realized that too. So... Brian.
All right, yeah, let's go. So from me, early on in my career, heavily involved in F&B restaurants, and I always made an adamant statement: if I/we can't eat here, we're not opening the doors. So that's got to be something that I think that's built into people's heads that are in any food and service industry, that cleanliness, proper food handling. The other thing with these hotels, especially that offer that continental breakfast, if you can't do it right, just don't do it.
Yeah.
Partner with the local economy. Bring in a local mom and pop breakfast, lunch, dinette. Let them come in and handle it. Let them get their brand exposure to the guests that are coming to your hotel. And why don't you just focus on getting people checked in, into their room, keep the room clean, get their sheets changed, and just focus on what you're good at. Just because you have a 200 square foot place to cram people in to try to feed them, now make it the best experience. You know, throw somebody else's logo or brand up there and let that, you know, again, let that local economy restaurant earn some extra money, have their visibility, and let them have all the liability on the food preparation, the delivery, and the experience. So, you know, with that being said, that's what I think that these hotels should do, and it would make sense. It would be great branding and PR as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's just something has to be done about it. I just want to put a disclaimer up there. So we're in no way we're actually bashing the brands on their breakfast or anything of that sort. We're just being very kind to the industry right now. And we're just trying to advise them on what they should do next. So this is nothing about bashing the brands at all. Stephanie?
Hello. So first of all, the first thing I want to say is I have stayed at Homewood Suites, probably 20 times. It was the chosen hotel for our soccer team, for my kids' soccer teams. And I will say, not that the breakfast was spectacular or amazing or anything else, but it was always hot. It was always what they had said it was. And the staff was always great. They were always very sweet. They were always willing to get something else. And so I can't say, I don't have anything bad to say about that. I can actually argue the breakfast thing both ways, but I do agree with Brian. Let somebody else do it. In having four kids at very, very different ages and not wanting them to leave the hotel, but maybe two of them weren't up or one of them was up and you don't want them to maybe go get something, I wish there was a different way to do it, because I do agree that probably some of it wasn't as, you know, clean or as appetizing. For me, the thing, playing on what Brian said, is I wish that somebody would just ask, like, whenever you check in, like, you know, whatever, gluten-free, dairy-free, you know, soy-free, any allergies, vegetarian, whatever that happened to be, and then partner with a local company that did grab food that was still great food, but, you know, maybe a little bit more sanitary, maybe a little bit more fresh, whatever it happened to be. The biggest thing for me is just the overall germs and the freshness and how things are played out. If you do it really, really well. If you don't, do it, partner with somebody who does it really well. Create an alliance, you know, more allies instead of enemies, and actually really focus on what your guests want, because that'll really keep them coming back as far as any sort of food accommodations that you're going to make for breakfast.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely great that you brought that up, Stephanie, because I think one of the biggest problems in these hotel breakfasts, and just to be very candid, here is that it's the vendors. There's really only two vendors. Two. It's Cisco and US
Foods. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
And does Aramark do it too?
No.
No, Aramark doesn't do it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. That is the biggest problem, I'm telling you. It's if we went to a different vendor route, went to even local bakeries or something.
Yeah.
And I've said that for a long time. I know, I'm glad Brian brought that up, but it's something I've said for so many years, is that we shouldn't have to get cinnamon rolls the way we get them. You know, I know IHG did it with Cinnabon for a while. Mm-hmm. I don't know who they're using now, but still, I mean, sandwiches, eggs, you know, I mean, it's just not healthy. It's not healthy food. We live in a healthy, conscious community now. So,
well, and the other thing is so many options. Like if you go in and there's so many options, the last breakfast I had 13 buffet items, and one of them looked okay. Like, you know, maybe that the fruit had been used a day or maybe two, I don't really know, but just, it wasn't packaged and it just didn't look appetizing. And again, for me, the biggest thing is the kids, is I don't want them to, now I don't care if they leave, but when they were younger, I didn't want them to leave the hotel. I wanted them to be able to stay home and, or bring something up for the little one or whatever it was. There's not great options when it comes to things like that.
Yeah. And you know, even to add on, if somebody wants to get the best hotel breakfast in the world, Rio Palace Peninsula in Cancun, Mexico, the best hotel breakfast in the world.
I was going to say, it's not the Cabo one, because I've got friends right now and I'm getting pictures.
Yeah, no. This thing is a newer property. So okay. It's the Rio brands do really well. So, Katie?
Oh, my God. Okay, so this... Brandy, from the moment I was watching, I was like both in horror but also laughing. Like the background music where it's just like you're like almost scared with every fact she's giving. But I couldn't get past the whole one paper towel every night to clean the entire floor thing. I don't know about you guys, like mind blowing to me, because they were also they were trying to conserve and be eco-friendly. I was like, don't play it on that. But yeah, I thought this was very alarming. Everyone has their certain things that they judge hotels off of, right? And now mine is going to be the breakfast, hands down. We'll only stay places with great breakfast. But no, I mean, it comes down to really what all of you said, where they need to have proper training, of course, and they need to just have such an importance on that. But yeah, no, this was very alarming and eye-opening for sure.
It's very hard. One of the toughest positions to fill in the hotel industry is a breakfast hostess. You have to be there 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to make somebody run around like crazy at 4:35 in the morning.
Yeah.
Hey, Ken, you know what's really interesting about that? I was just in New York a couple weeks ago. The guy I was talking to, the hotel manager, he said this is I felt this, but to Calvin's point, I thought this was really interesting. The hostess and was also a server and was also served at the front desk and also served at the bell station as well. And admitted that they were different. They had different. He said we have different licensing. So I'm assuming that's different brands. But that one host, because the next day I saw her, she gave me water at the front desk and I was like, oh, hi. And then a couple days later, she helped us with our luggage to come out. And this is a big brand.
Yeah, you know what I call that?
Can we say it on air?
Oh, I'm going to say it anyway.
Okay.
Hospitality BS, you know? It's Hospitality BS 101 is just letting you know in a way they're short staffed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, my baby sister works in close to Atlanta in the hospitality industry. She works for a hotel brand. I'm not going to mention it, but she's an AGM at a property right now. And while I was there, I came down one morning. She was making breakfast.
And
she's probably one of the most hospitable people that you can ever meet. And you know, so I mean, she was engaging with guests and all of that. So again. But she's properly trained. She knows what she's doing.
Right.
So what I don't want to do is say, hey, get rid of breakfast. What I want to say is make sure you train people properly. And that's what's the key is that without the training, it's just create a negative experience.
But you know, Calvin, there's no training. Nobody does any training for that department. There's nothing. Zero, you know, and that has to change. But
yes, that's huge.
Yeah, Sanam.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to speak from the perspective of hotel managers and operators.
Just remember, this is not Dubai breakfast. Or
definitely not.
No, it's not.
No, so when we even enter into contract, the F&B component of the entire management of the property is actually an integral part of signing up that property.
Exactly.
If we do not have sign off on any third party vendors, and if we don't pick and choose who we put into the hotel as an F&B component, we would not sign on, because it affects our brand. So, and what we have done is we have said to owners as well. Guys, this is not a competition. This is about making sure that the property and the hotel, that we're maximizing revenue per square meter. And the way to do that is, first of all, having your own F&B, it's really, really expensive in terms of money. You know, that is perhaps the only staff that has to be on premises. You have to make sure that, you know, on site, all of that stuff. So the equipment is expensive, the warranties are expensive, you have to speak to suppliers. So getting the whole kitchen component and running it yourself is very heavy money. If you can do it, brilliant. If it's a smaller property and you can, that's fine. And we've done it both ways. You know, we've done it as in, you know, we will run it and manage the property, and we tell the owner what we put in terms of, you know, manning costs and all of that. And what we've done actually in the house hotel in Jeddah is actually brought in a well-known brand and plugged it in to serve breakfast and to serve, you know, in-room dining, and to be open all day. And it opens to the street. It gets people, you know, coming into the property. They make amazing breakfast. They know exactly what they're doing. They know their suppliers. They know, you know, the machines are doing what they're meant to do. They have training every 6 months. So, you know, some people come in to the chef. You know, the staff is still the operator staff, but, you know, that's the person that they've trained, responsible for that. You're still managing the property. But you can't serve if you've been never crashed. There is absolutely no harm. And I'm talking about the 5 stars to the, you know, little bed and breakfast somewhere in the middle of France, where you can, you know, talk to a neighbor and say, you know, come in and cook breakfast every day at 4:30. So the partnership can be with anybody, really, depending on where your hotel is positioned. So we as managers have done both. But what we will not do is, as Brian said, is open door without the F&B component really plugged in, decided, signed off, and, you know, a person for every job.
Fabulous. Well said. Fabulous. I already like you, and I've only met you one time. So. You know, Daniel?
I mean, we stay in a lot of hotels during season. Obviously, when we're on the road, we go from hotel to hotel. And just 2 things that really stood out listening to all you guys talk with Brian and Calvin were, if you're going to do it, just don't do it to do it, you know? And I think that that's something that when you go from hotel to hotel, you can really tell when someone is doing it because they want to do it and they really buy into doing it. And you can tell when someone's doing it just because it has to say that, hey, we have this.
Mm-hmm.
And Calvin said earlier when we were talking about the Margaritaville thing, about, you know, the service and, you know, people like being there and making you feel welcome. And I think that goes back to the training. I think that if someone is working the breakfast and they aren't well trained, normally when you succeed in stuff and you're happy, you know, you're very well trained and you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing and you don't want to be there, you're not going to be happy. I think that rubs off on, you know, people that are going there in the mornings and the people that are staying there. You go there in the morning and that person isn't in a good mood and it rubs off. And it's not that they're in a good mood and not in a good mood. They're just overwhelmed and don't really know what they're doing. So I think that's the main thing that I've noticed from staying from hotel to hotel.
Yeah. And that's very well said, Daniel. And, you know, it's just a labor point of this. Some breakfast attendees and hostesses, my apologies if I'm calling you attendees, but hostesses, are working 7 days in a row. Why? Because their schedules go from 5 a.m. to 12 p.m.
Right.
And that's a 7-hour day. I mean, I'm sorry, what am I calculating? It's a 6-7-hour day, right? So some of them come in at 5 and leave at 10. So that's a 5-hour day. And if you times that by 7 days, that's only 35 hours. So they're literally working 7 days in a row. and they could be working 60 days in a row. Some of them do that. People don't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, how can somebody literally do that for and work 60 straight days, right? And I think this is the problem we're going to keep having unless it gets fixed. So that is the end. You know, it's been a great show. 12, 10, 21. We've got exactly 3 weeks till the year ends, and we're at 2022. So awesome. I'm excited for that. Obviously, Sanam, thank you for being here from Dubai and being with us on such a late night. That is very much appreciated. And we look forward to having you on again as well. And then Daniel, thank you for being here on your first appearance. I'm sure we'll get you on again as well.
For sure.
Your insights was phenomenal. So is Sanam. And then Katie, thank you for being here once again. And
thank you.
Other rock star panel guests, you know, Brian, Stephanie, Calvin, thank you all. We look forward to seeing everybody next week.
And Daniel, congratulations again in January, pal.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, man. Absolutely awesome. Man. Congratulations. Sanam, thank you so much. It was so late for you. Thank you for contributing so much. It was really nice.
I love the whole
evening
team. I think you guys are
Sanam.
Fabulous. Thank you.
I'm going to call you. Come into Dubai. Call you, Sanam. I'm going to call you. I got you.
Yes.
There we go.
Oh, yeah. Got to do it.
Yeah, we got to do it. There you go.
Never forget.
Not yet, ma'am. We dropped it a very